Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Check, check.
Check, 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 check. 1, 2.
So I want to start with this. I woke, even though this has nothing to do with this week's episode, I woke up this morning and This was the first thing on my mind for no reason.
Horoscopes often lie. Woo! It's him and I. One episode.
Hey, good morning.
Good afternoon.
Good evening.
And good night.
Well,
and I've tried for a long time to get rid of you out of my life. And you know what? We're just a Quemini, baby. It's you and I. Quemini. There's one episode. It's what it is. It's what Cypher. It is.
So real quick, we're going to have a big show today. We're going different directions and getting voices that you wouldn't expect for your Pun Dilla tribute.
Exactly. What do you think? Big Pun, what do you think?
Terror Squad.
You think Fat Joe?
Yes.
You think Remy Ma, Triple Sace, Cuban Link? No, let's go different, man. Everyone does that.
So we're going to do Dead Prez.
Dead Prez.
To talk Pun. And then we're going to get Frank Nitt from Frank and Dank, who was close since childhood with JD.
Why not?
This is going to be an incredible, only one ep could do it kind of episode.
And here's the thing about one ep. The way we do it, you want to do hip-hop podcasts nowadays? Everybody's got one? Okay, we'll go even nerdier.
That's right.
But you got to help us go nerdier.
How?
We need a little bit of that Skrilla.
That scratch.
We need a little bit of that cash, that dough, that fetty, that guap, that cheese, that
cheddar,
lettuce.
Gouda.
We need you to subscribe to that Patreon. I'm looking you right in your eye. I know I look high. I don't smoke. This is just my regular face. I'm looking. This is not video. Just, I'm looking at you. Subscribe to our Patreon. Subscribe to the podcast. Rate us. Review us.
Billy
help
June,
help us help
Billy
you.
June. Billy June, real quick. On the Patreon, how many people we have as patrons?
27. Or 28.
And what would you say is the average amount that the patrons are giving? What would you say?
The highest tier, $10. That fourth meal.
Fourth meal.
Most
really?
People are doing the 10 bucks.
Yeah, they want the 2 episodes a month.
Yo, so listen, guys, we appreciate you very much.
$10. That's it.
What?
Sorry. Go ahead.
Just calm down. So we know that you have a lot of ways to spend money. We all subscribe to so many things.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. And Sife and I, you're thinking, these guys are fine. Sife's, he's got his very famous NY.com shirts flying off the shelves.
Flying. Which,
by the way, still available right now. However, it's not even just about the money. We can't look like trash out here.
Mm-hmm.
We got to have mad patrons.
Yeah.
We can't have – so if – listen, I get it. And by the way, if you can't afford – if you're not trying to throw the full 10, I get it. But whatever you can do to support so we can do this long term, because the truth is – We got to get up to enough money to pay this pathetic Billy June.
Yeah, it's not the money. It's the momentum we build. We build that momentum. We're going to get on a I hate saying this, but we're going to get on a bigger platform.
Hey now. Although I don't know, Sife, if my hope would be honestly is that we completely crush it with Patreon and we get to the point where it's like, yeah, we could do other stuff if we want.
Okay.
We're doing so well here, it doesn't matter.
Maybe platform is not the right thing we're searching for, but at least our own facility.
Oh, that would be great.
You know what I mean? Our own universe.
Ooh. Now, we're going to dive right into all this stuff.
Wait. I need 2 minutes.
Go ahead.
I saw you the other night punch a man in his balls and take his clothing. What happened here? I saw you punch a man in his balls, hump him, and then take an article of clothing.
It wasn't an article of clothing, Sife. It was the WWE 24/7 Championship.
Okay, it was a belt.
It's a title, yeah.
It was a fucking accessory to an outfit.
That's a good point.
Yeah, what's happening here? Are you some kind of champion?
I was.
You're already not a champion?
I lost it the next day. I lost, but I made it. I had it for 17 hours, I think, or maybe two. No. I got it around 8:30 or 9 o'clock on Sunday.
And how are you eligible? What is this?
The 24/7 championship in WWE has to be defended any time. So I caught my man R-Truth slipping.
Yeah,
and I did what I had to do. But in all seriousness, when I tell you, I'm trying to think of what the equivalent would be for you. It's like getting.
Well, tell me what it is first, and I'll give you the equivalent.
Okay, so the WWE Championship is sort of a comedic title in that the guy who has it most of the time is R-Truth. It's basically he always has it, then someone takes it, then he gets it back.
Uh huh.
And it's done in funny ways, like other silly things have happened where he's lost the title.
Got it.
That being said. It is officially listed as a WWE title.
Uh-huh.
There is a lineage to the title that's followed.
Right.
And it exists.
And it's authentic.
And they sell the replica belt on the website.
Mm-hmm.
It's real. And so on that night, there was this idea to do this, and I thought it would happen during the kickoff show, which I normally do.
Right.
For whatever reason, shit happens. And I assume it's not going to happen. And I'm like, yo, it's a dream. It would be a dream come true to do that. That'd be so fun.
Yeah.
But, like, I'm not tripping to be that guy. You know, I don't even want people to hate on me. There's some level I'm scared of the hate that's going to come from it.
Yeah.
So I'm like, it's whatever. Then I find out it's not going to come up on the kickoff show. It's going to come up during the actual Royal Rumble event. In retrospect, Sife, if I had had time to think about how much you have to get it just right to not fuck it up, and the fact that when it, as Dipperstein and I were talking yesterday, and he's like, do you realize everyone who likes wrestling a little bit watches the Royal Rumble?
Of course.
Everybody watches the Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
So I didn't think about until it was over how much opportunity there is to fuck up this thing that's so live.
Right.
And if and all day I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to do it correctly. And like I thought I already had an appreciation for what these guys and girls do.
Yeah.
I didn't even to do something that basic and realize that you had to put that much thought into getting it right.
Yeah.
And then it happened, and when I went back and watched it, I was like, yo, this shit looks pretty good. Like, people were critiquing certain things about it. But at the end of the day, the clip came off, I thought, as, like, funny. And, like, it worked. It worked.
I loved it. I loved it. And my favorite thing about it is the clip you posted of, I guess, Smoke Dizza watching it.
Yeah,
was it Smoke Dizza?
I think so, yeah.
And he's watching. He's, like, laughing and, like, oh, that, like, I can hear him laughing and also going, oh, that's my boy. That's my boy.
Bro, the amount, I have never gotten that level of, in one moment, people going, holy shit.
Nah,
like,
big.
People who, like, here's my question. I didn't ask you this yet. Did you hear from anyone?
A lot of people.
And Billy June, did you hear from anyone?
Yeah, I was watching it with for my friend's birthday, and they were all like, oh, fuck. And then I was watching it live.
Wait, so you were?
I texted Saif.
Well, so wait, so Billy June. So what the fuck were you?
I don't know about
then?
Billy June sends me a text.
I just sit there. They say, "Stop asking questions. You're fucking dumb." I watch it the whole time. I was like, "Oh, that's Pete. That's Pete." Then all of a sudden, I see you on there, and my friends were like, "What the fuck?" And then I was just so confused. I was like, "What just happened?"
Yo, Saif, it was so satisfying that by the time Tuesday came around and it was starting to calm down, I felt a legitimate,
like relief, right?
Yeah. No, oh, withdrawal. Yeah. Of all the validation I'd been getting. I was Twitter, Instagram, text message, articles, like there was so, you know, that shit affects me. And I'm glad I've gotten to a point in my life now where I can recognize, oh, you're feeling it. Calm down.
Yeah, that's great.
Be aware.
That's great. What? How did it get taken away?
I was doing the Michael Kay show from Tampa the next day, and R-Truth climbed in my balcony and pinned me in the middle of the Michael Kay show and took it back. You haven't seen that clip?
No.
He throws me all over the hotel room. Hold on, I'll play you a little.
Oh God!
I'll play you a little snippet of it. It's actually sad and alarming. What
was there a referee?
Yeah, he brought a referee.
There always has to be a referee.
Yeah, you can only do it. It can happen anywhere, but you need a referee there. So otherwise, here you go.
24 hours.
It's on my way to me because it almost seems like you were scheming. I mean, I watched some of the video of it.
Almost.
So you've been scheming about this for a long time.
Well, I see this guy. R-Truth shows up to every one of our kickoff shows. My name wrong. And then I signaled to said ref moment, got the referee. You realize what...
Coming in behind you, bud.
You realize what you're dealing with and the sort of level of play. We're talking about an all-star...
Do you have a balcony?
I do.
I think there's somebody coming in behind you, bud.
Yeah. You gotta look.
Saif, look up.
All no, right. I'm telling you, there's somebody behind you, Peter.
Look, I didn't see anyone.
be very careful.
Yeah, be very careful, man.
Somebody again.
No, there's definitely somebody behind you,
Peter,
brother.
Peter, watch out.
Yeah. You know what time
whoa. Hold on.
Here, Pete.
Hold on.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, no. Title's on the line.
This is not good.
Oh, is he going to be able to hold this title
by WrestleMania? Oh, no. 1, 2, 3. See ya. That's it. Rosenberg has lost a 24/7 championship.
What is your life, yo? What is your life?
What is my life? And the best part, as I love how I have to drag people into the whole thing. Now Michael has to be calling a wrestling match. Now, naturally, when I showed up to Hot 97 the next day, do you think I was? Do you think Ebro celebrated me on the morning show? Or do you think he had some bizarre theory instead?
Do you want me to speak from experience?
Sure.
I'm going to go with bizarre, hurtful theory. I'm going to throw hurtful in there.
So Ebro gets on the air and makes the entire thing about how on Black History Month, I stole something from a black man. The whole day. Yo, to the point of being like, yo, black people, call up right now. Do you think Rosenberg violated by stealing something? First of all, I was like, Ebro, first of all, it was January 31st.
Oh, God.
And Shawnee was like, I don't know. It was. But in general, with the exception of that bizarre experience.
Your phone is still playing in the background.
Oh. With the exception of that bizarre experience.
Yeah.
Everyone was so excited, and it was fun, man.
Well,
it was,
congrats, it was super man. Cool.
Thank you. I'm a champion.
I was happy for you. Just, I know you love that stuff. And
oh,
I
so what's
watching.
The equivalent now? What do you think's the equivalent?
Oh, there's no titles in comedy.
I
so
know. Would it be like getting to come out at something? It's like it's such a unique sort of thing to qualify. Because like for an athlete, it's like, oh, you dreamed of being in sports your whole life, and they let you suit up for one game.
Right.
You know, it's hard. Like during a monologue during SNL, you come out and say something to, like, I don't know. So I'm trying to think.
When Michael Che hosted the Emmys, there was a slight chance. There was a conversation about me DJing the Emmys, a part of the Emmys with him. That would have been a good one.
There was
talks of like, hey, maybe you could come out at this part with me and like DJ some part, you know, and it didn't happen.
Well, guess what, Saif? Your 24/7 moment is coming, and I will be there, and I won't accuse you of any sort of weird racial tactics.
My 24/7 moment is here because, one, we have amazing listeners, we have patrons, subscribe to the Patreon, and we have the episode of Life, which is about, unfortunately, death.
That's right.
Jay Dilla. Big Pun, rest in peace.
So let's get right to it. Let's start this with the Jay Dilla conversation with a guy who is best friends, worked with him, an artist. Let's bring Frank Nitt of Frank and Denk on the show.
All right, Cypher. So we decided we should probably just do this every year. And I always celebrate this in some way, either on my show. And this year we're great. It's great because we have the podcast back. But, you know, there's always the anniversary of Pun's death and the birthday of Jay Dilla. And I was like, how can we do something different? Because as our listeners know, Saif is not a Dilla head. But as the years have gone on, you've learned and you've delved more in. Correct, Saif?
I want to be clear about this. I mean, no disrespect whatsoever. I am a regular hip-hop fan of what Dilla does. I am not one of those hardcore Dilla fanatics, right. which in general, sometimes people take as disrespect. I love his beats, his music was fire. I'm just not that fucking nutcase fan. You right. understand the difference?
No, and there is a difference.
I don't want no drama.
No. Well, you wouldn't want any because today, I'm really excited to talk to this guy. You may know him from many joints, like, you know, this, for example. You know, Dilla had a group called Frank and Denk.
Yeah.
Whose 12 inches I started buying, I don't know, around 2000, something like that. I'm sure Frank Nitt can give me the exact dates.
It was around 2000, yes. 99, 2000.
Frank is Frank of Frank and Dank, a.k.a. Frank Nitt.
Frank Nitt, all the way from Denver.
Denver, I wish. I mean, I'm in crazy Cali where, you're supposed to wear a mask, but they don't because the sun out. So,
I got to ask you this. Before we even get into the life and legacy of your friend, James Yancey, let me ask you about California. I feel like everybody I know, and I'm talking about progressive, seemingly responsible people and really not resist like hanging out with other people. Like they seem incapable in my limited conversations. Am I wrong?
It's tough out here, man. Like me, it's cool. Like this whole pandemic thing, I was a house dude anyway. So, you know, it ain't much change for me. But the sun, man, the sun and the beach, it makes it really tough to say no to outside. And, yeah. You know, like, you know, I'm from Detroit where it gets cold and snows and here, even on
Detroit, Oh, I thought the D on your hat was for Denver.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm an idiot.
Yes, sir. But anyway.
I'm kidding, Frank. I'm kidding.
So it's hard to come out here. I mean, to stay in the house here. So now people getting busted for mansion parties, pool parties, you know, the bonfires on the beach with 63,000 people. So, you know, it's tough, though. I understand.
No, I get it.
The heat in the water.
Somebody tried to book me to DJ on the beach, this party that they do.
Mm-hmm.
And they were showing me videos of the past events. And I was like,
when are these past events from?
Well, like a week ago, like right. 2 weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, nobody's wearing masks. Everybody's hugged up.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is allowed? And they're like, no.
Yeah, the answer is
Well, maybe it's allowed for people who love music. I don't know, bro. I'm in the house. I stay in the crib, bro. I'll be at the crib trying to work.
How long, Frank, how long have you been out in California?
Oh, man. This is
years ago.
11?
Year 11.
Year 11. Yep. Because I was here for 4 years. And then I called myself visiting Detroit to see my mom and family and everything. And then Dilla's mom ambushed me at the house and made me work for her. So I stayed in the D for a year before I came back out here.
Shouts to Ma Dukes.
Yeah, man.
So you didn't come out there originally, though, when Dilla came out around, what, 2000?
2003. Well, at 2004, he came out. No, me and Dank were in Canada recording an album. We had just did a deal with a Canadian label and Universal Canada there. And we were there recording a record when he moved out here.
In Windsor?
This was 2003, 2004. Late 2003, early 2004.
But was it Windsor, Canada, right across the border from Detroit?
Oh, no, Windsor. Oh, no, no. We were in Toronto.
4 hours away.
4 hours away, yeah.
I know the drive.
Yeah.
All my Detroit friends are dudes that I met at Caravana. Because all the Detroit dudes drive to Caravana in Toronto. Yeah. It's like a 4-hour drive. Let's party.
It's so quick. It's so quick. It's a straight shot and you there.
Yep.
So, yeah.
Straight shot. Yep.
Yeah.
When did you meet JD?
1986.
So y'all were like 12 years old?
12. He's a few months older than me. So he was 13. I was 12.
And what it was in school?
Yeah. Yep. We met because I moved into the neighborhood the year of 86 for sixth grade. So when I got there, that's when we met all at school. But
like, which mile was that? Which mile?
7 mile. 7 mile.
Mm-hmm, good question, mm-hmm, Sife. Mm-hmm. Very good. Mm-hmm.
7 mile.
I'm dropping all my Detroit knowledge.
Detroit knowledge right now. We 6 or 7 miles. Yeah.
And how into the music already was young JD at, you know, 12 and a half years old?
Into music, listening, singing, you know, he was, you know, church choirs with the family and this and that, and, you know, had a love for music. Obviously, both his parents are musicians, singers. But he hadn't grabbed the hip hop completely just yet. At that time, we were all breakers, hip hop dancers. So that's kind of where we bonded as dancers first. So, and then not even a year later, he was making beats and it was over. That was history.
What was he messing with at the way beginning? What do you remember the machines?
At the very, very beginning, there was no machines. It was dual cassettes. It was two dual cassette decks. And he would do what they call pause and record beats, where you would have to, you know, record sections of the beat on each tape. And then the final tape would record the whole thing. Right. Mm-hmm. So you get one beat, and it's crazy difficult to do it, but This is to the genius of Dilla. He would one day, because it was like up in the attic at his house. And you know, we were 13, 14 year old kids, right? So one day I come to the house and we upstairs and he messed around with the beats. And I noticed that one of the cassette decks was torn apart, right? Like the top was off and just all undone, right? And you could see all the internals. And I'm like, what's going on? He's like, oh man, I needed to figure out a way to speed up my samples or slow my samples down. So he tore the cassette deck apart and found the idler screw so he could slow the tape down and get his samples slow or speed it all the way up and get his samples so he could get his samples right for his beat. So he's always been very when he locks in and something, he's locked in. So wow. That was early on. And then he got like one of the old little cheap little four pad drum machines when he was probably about 14 or 15. That was like his first like machine. And then from there, you know, it was Ant Fiddler put him on about with the MPC 60. And then, you know, from there it was the SP 1200, the S950, the 3000. It's all over the place.
Syph, we always talk about who were like the people in hip hop who were like, how are you capable of showing up to the park and plugging into the lamppost? Dilla is the kid who would have, had he been like another 7 years earlier, he would have been the kid capable of plugging into the lamppost.
The Questlove told me a story about a Dilla beat. He took some soul record and made an instrumental version of it by chopping up half the snare one part and then the second half of the snare in another part, and like the bass line was like from 50 different pieces, and he just took like an Isley Brothers record, and not made a beat out of it, basically made an instrumental version of the song. And it's like, there's no instrumentals, this was like just a song that was just had vocals, and he basically all night long pieced it together to make an instrumental with all the changes and all the fucking arrangement. And I was like, wow, this guy was incredible.
Man, you know, now that I can look back on it, I feel like, you know, I guess I was super lucky or blessed or whatever the situation was to like be his homeboy and kind of be there and watch him work, because he wasn't a person to like people watching him work per se.
Right.
So, like, but I was lucky. And it's like, to that point of him being very tedious and very like on it, he would like go record shopping, right? I hated record shopping, right? Because, you know, I wasn't a producer digger type of guy. I was more of a rapper, whatever guy. So yeah. I hated digging, but I had to go, right? Like, so he would go digging, and then once he would get all his records, go back to the crib, when he wanted to start making beats, he would take like whatever random record that he had bought and just put it on and let it play. And then he would go clean up the studio, dust all his records and do all these different things, right? And the record would just be playing in the background. And when it got to the end, he'd take it, flip it over, and go back and clean it up. Later on, when he's ready to make a beat, he'll take that same record, put it on, and drop the needle where he wants. Like, he heard that record and understands where everything is from a distance. He wasn't there with it. Like,
wasn't even paying attention.
No, he's doing something else occupying his mind, but he heard everything that was there and can go right back to it. Maybe one, two drops, and he got what he was looking for. Oh, I want this part right here. And even that, I watch him listen to records and pour over a record. And for me, I'm hearing the same record over and over and over and over again. And he keep telling me, nah, Frank, there's somewhere in there that it's a part that I need. That's, you know, a 1 second little thing that's the turnaround for this beat I'm making, but it's covered by vocals. But somewhere on this record, I'm gonna find it without the vocals on top. And he'll do it. Wow. He'll sit there for hours and dissect it down to nothing. So, it's real. It's the them stories is real for sure.
So
now, as you tell a story, the nostalgia of it is beautiful, but I'm positive you were sitting in that studio annoyed as fuck, like listening to the same shit.
Yeah.
That's the thing about studios, people don't realize, it's like, it's kind of boring. It's like just the same shit over and over.
Yeah, if you ain't in the process of creating something yourself,
yeah,
sitting there is like, whoa, like, what is going on?
So were you already rapping at that point? Like, did you guys do any other attempts at groups before he found Slum Village and that was the direction he went? Were there other versions of groups among you guys?
Like, you know, he started off as MC Silk, right? Like, he was
MC
a solo
Silk, baby.
He was a solo, you know, solo artist. I was in a group called Mad Skills prior. And then there was a moment when it was kind of in between Slum, where it was just kind of me and him. Like, Dank, Frank and Dank came after Slum and all that. Like, Dank was Dank. His full name was President Dankworth. So, because he was the only person that smoked at the time, right? So, Frank and Dank was kind of the idea of T3 and J Dilla, right? So that came after. Before, there was a time where Dilla was solo. I wasn't in the group, and we were kind of just, we would spar, basically. He'd make a beat in 20 minutes. We had 30 minutes to write raps, and that's how we practiced until the slum thing came about, right? And then that kind of shifted it all.
So when did T3 and Ba 10 kind of show up in your guys' lives?
Ninth grade for me would have been 10th grade for Dilla. So yeah, around that time. So around 88, 89, 90.
And again, just a school thing. They just showed, it was just people meeting in school, and this was just,
well, yes and no, because Dilla went to another school, right? He was at a different high school than me, Dank, Batin, T3, Wajid. We all went to the same high school, Persian High School. So they actually heard about Dilla because he was getting, like, you know, the buzz. Because at the time, as y'all would know, well, maybe not for y'all, but for us, like, it wasn't the cool thing to be a hip-hop kid. Do you understand? It wasn't like...
Right.
Like, now, where we come from, this music hip-hop thing is like a viable way out, much like basketball or something like that, or going to school,
not back then,
that type of thing. But back then, that wasn't a viable way out. So you can't, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, it was, it's hard to explain it, but we had a different, like, just trying to come up and be around. We were somewhere in the middle. We was cool kids, but hip hop kids too. So it's kind of, we was in a weird place back then. Yeah.
No, that's what it was. That's what it was back then. The I'm assuming, and I could be wrong. I hope I'm not racist. I'm assuming you're talking about some street activities.
Yes. Right? Yes. And, let's just say that.
And yeah, like, it's the same mentality from those neighborhoods where, like, you know, you're doing what you want to, doing what you gotta do to survive and to get out, but the music is still part of it.
Yeah.
Now, because of what you guys did back in the day, and I'm talking about, you know, all you old motherfuckers, made it. You took what y'all were doing, and I'm old too, but you took what y'all was doing and then funded the music, and then the music became a way out.
Yeah.
But it's not like, but like when we talk about those days, like, the rappers weren't cool.
No.
You know what I'm saying? They had to be around a lot of cool people. Like, everybody, Rakim was not cool.
No. The drug dealers that he hung with was the cool.
Everybody on the back, everybody on the back of the album cover, those were the cool kids with the cars and the jewelry. And I'm sure none of those chains were actually Rakim's. I'm sure they were like, here, wear this for the photo shoot.
For the look.
You know what I mean? And then it became cool.
Right.
But it had to go through that.
Again, we walked that line because, you know, we were connected to both sides. We wasn't street guys. You know what I'm saying? We was music guys. But like everybody around us, the homeboys, you know, is on some street. But the beauty of it was they allow us the space to go and be those guys. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Y'all go do that.
That's a whole nother
coming to the show. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's a whole nother podcast we got to do, Rosenberg.
Yeah,
one
like
day,
diving like, into those, like, relationships and how that worked.
It wouldn't be possible without those guys.
No, not at all. Not at all. They definitely created space for music guys.
They funded.
Yeah.
They created safety. Like,
yeah,
we'll watch over you while you go do this. So where was Dilla in that world?
I mean, most of us was definitely leaning music side. Do you understand? It wasn't like, you know, we grew up in Detroit, in the hood. Do you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Where it's gunshots and all types of things. But we also had very good, solid family units. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So
while
we rubbed elbows, we didn't have the need to jump in. And again, back then it wasn't cool to jump in. You understand?
Right.
You did that out of necessity. And then if you came up, then you was the cool guy. You get what I'm saying?
Right. Yeah,
you jumped in because you had to, not because
no choice,
it was just a thing to do. You get what I'm saying? So we had good, solid family structure, me, mm-hmm. Dilla, and Dank, and most of us in our little clique. So it was a lot easier.
You can tell by the music.
Yeah, it was a lot easier for us to stay away from the things that would have changed our trajectory, per se. You know what I'm saying? But we didn't live in a fantasy land. Reality is that, you know, my homeboy, even though he's my homeboy, is on the other side.
Yeah.
He might not show up here tomorrow. You understand? So it was always, we were right in the middle of it, if that makes any sense. And I mean, you hear it in the music from the, you know, strip club songs and all that.
I was going to ask you though. So when does JD, you know, music nerd, you know, guy who just loves this, when did he also fall in love with sort of the strip club culture? Because every story I've heard from every artist, basically, who went to spend time with JD was like, yo, we're going to go to the strip club. He might go post up there for hours and eat and do his thing. And like, that was a big part. And it's in the music too.
Yeah.
You know, he has a lot of records where he talks about sort of the mixed, how he understood, he seemed to understand that he was an anomaly and that he was this, you know, sound of the underground who loved ice and strip clubs. So when did that start becoming part of his life?
Early, you know, as soon as we could get in, you know what I'm saying? Like, and in Detroit, you know, there's an underground scene of let's say strip club activity.
Go on.
That you don't necessarily have to be 21 to get into, right? So from, you know, 18-year-old, 17-year-old kids, when we were able to get out and be on our own, that was part of it. You understand? That's just part of Detroit life. Again, music nerd, yes, but his name was MC Silk because he had a closet full of silk shirts and he wore a different color silk shirt to high school every day. You understand? So it wasn't, you know, I was, you know, and I got senior pictures from high school in, you know, $400 Coogee sweater. So it wasn't, we still had access to what was cool and what, you know, what was popping.
There was always that duality. It was always there.
You understand? Like, and the strip club was just an extension of that. You know, once the money came in, it's what do you do? Like, in Detroit, what do you do where, as a music guy, you can feel a level of comfort and safety, but as a dude who, like, you know, big old booties and strip club music and weed and that vibe, how do you blend the two? And I think that he was right there. He found that, like, kind of balance where it made sense. Now, his mama blames me for it all, but it's not true. I was with him. He was with me. I was with him.
He was older than you. He was slightly older than you.
Yes, he was. He was a few months older than me. Yes, it was his fault. I blame him. She blames
so
me.
So he threw you under the bus?
No, he didn't. His mama did. His mom, my dude, say, Frank, it's all your fault. Because, you know, I was the one that was there. You get what I'm saying? And Dill ain't a big on words guy. You know what I'm saying? Like, he wasn't a big take action guy. So back then, I was like the mouthpiece. Like, we getting in, you want to go do that? Okay, let me go over here and talk to these people. We about to do that type of thing.
Well, that's
so
one of the things that's interesting about Dill to me is that he didn't seem to be a super talkative guy. There's not a ton of interviews. You know, he reminds me in some ways, you know, Sife, he reminds me in some ways from a distance of Kev Brown, you know, who I worked with for years of like really a homebody producer who that's really his default place to go. Is there another version of the Dilla story in which because of that, because he wasn't going to be out there talking about himself constantly, this maybe doesn't all happen? Like, are you surprised in some ways that the tape getting to Q-Tip sort of led to everything happening?
I guess that was kind of like a shot in the dark with the Q-Tip thing, because I mean, you know, Ann Fiddler wasn't in Parliament at the time that Ann Fiddler started helping us and letting us work in his studio and this type of thing. You know what I'm saying? That kind of came after the fact. So him being in the position to be touring with Parliament and be on tour with Tribe and have T3 and Dilla come to the show in Detroit and put them on the bus with Tribe you know what I'm saying? After he had played them some Slum Village stuff and make that thing happen. And then for Q-Tip to meet those guys, hey, yo, who making these beats type thing. And then for all that to happen, like, I don't know that you could have ever written that script. You understand? Because a lot of things had to happen before that actually got
As a naive person, just can you say that one more time? What's the Parliament thing? Who's that person?
Ant Fiddler was a part of the Parliament band.
Uh-huh.
And he's a musician, incredible keyboardist, just all around great musician, right?
And, right. And he's from Detroit?
And he's from Detroit. And okay. The first studio we started working in as kids was Amp Studio. And he actually taught Dilla the MPC 60.
Wow.
He was the first one to show Dilla that. And then Dilla took that and, you know, kind of ran with it. So Amp was part of the Parliament band. And they were on the Lollapalooza tour with Tribe, right? And they all came to Detroit. And when they came to Detroit, Amp had the boys come out, and they drove up there to the show. And after, you know, they got backstage and they got on Tribe's bus.
And that was just because he liked them from being in the neighborhood, working in the studio.
Yeah, like he
like took, a little, like an OG kind of thing.
Yeah, he's our OG to this day.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And
yes,
he helped all of us in, you know, the best he could. It wasn't about money, but he had equipment. He had a studio.
Yeah.
And, you know, and we can come over and pay our little $20, $30 so he can, you know, so we can have the day in the studio type of thing. So,
right.
And again, he gave us access to learning new equipment and things of that nature. So, it was him that actually put Slum's music in front of Tribe.
Wow. And then
Tribe, Q-Tip took that and said, okay, Dil, I don't know what I'm doing with you, but we're going to do something.
We're going to do something.
And it went off. You know what I mean?
And when was that? When was that?
Well, pre-Beats, Rhymes, and Life. So
94?
Yeah, 94.
94, 95?
So Beats, Rhymes, and Life is the first that we hear of Dilla, or at the time, JD, with Tribe and Q-Tip.
With Tribe. Okay. But before that, the Far Side Running had came out, the Lab Cabin California, and the Mad Skills record came out. So I think those were the two records first.
So how did the Far Side Running, that's around the same time. Does that still come after the Tribe meeting, or did that come from another route?
No, it's funny because on Dilla Fest, I got the owner of Delicious Vinyl on there, Mike Ross, and he tells the story about that, how he heard Dilla's beats. And it was because Farside was in New York working with Tip. And Tip had just started messing with Dilla, and Dilla was there in the studio.
So Dilla meeting Q-Tip, we didn't hear Dilla Tribe until Beats, Rhymes, and Life, but Q-Tip led or helped get the Far Side record out first. Wow. Yeah.
Well, and then Dilla ended up doing all that Delicious Vinyl. There's a brand new Heavies record. There's like a bunch of Delicious Vinyl stuff there.
Yeah. And and Delicious Vinyl, I mean, we've done, because I work with Delicious Vinyl and Dilla's mom, we've done music with Delicious Vinyl, you know, recently, as far as, you know, posthumous things with me and his brother, Illa J. We did the Sunset Boulevard record. You know, we put out some, you know, Lost Scrolls singles and different things like that with Dilla. And we also do J. Dilla merch at Delicious Vinyl now, too. So, yeah, man, you know, Delicious Vinyl got a rich, rich history. My first trip with Dilla to Cali was to come work on an India Davenport record with Delicious Vinyl. In like 95, 96.
Wow.
Dope. Run In, there's Drop, there's the Busta Records.
The Busta Records. I mean, it was so much stuff in that time. And things didn't come out. Like, you know, it was a lot.
Yeah, then it just all started rolling, you know, and then he did the two, there's two Wu-Ha remixes.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, we start getting into the, everything starts going. Now, when does Detroit, at this point, is Detroit fully taking notice? And, like, I'm curious to what artists that we're familiar with from Detroit history, do you recall having run-ins with at that time, or maybe Dilla working with or talking to at least about working with?
I'm saying, you know, like Proof, rest in peace, Proof, that was the homeboy. You understand? Like, we came
up.
Proof,
next for all, right?
Yeah, yeah. Proof was the mayor. He was the mayor of it all. You know what I'm saying? Like, I've only met him one time, and it was way back when he was recording the Infinite EP with, and I met him with Proof. You understand?
Wow.
So, wow. And I mean, but the other guys, Bizarre and you know, the Nine, those, you know, we were all on the same scene. Like, the hip hop shop, which was what Maurice Malone's clothing store, Proof ran it. And we would do like a Saturday hip hop shop, like Cypher, open mic night. And, you know, we had everybody come through there. I mean, Proof had everybody come through there from, you know, Busta Rhymes and different artists. And of course, all the local talent from Elzai to Slum to Waji to, you know, D12 to M. Like, one of Frank and Dank's first shows early on was on a show with him at another night Proof had. There was like an open mic night. And you know what I'm saying? That was one of the first times we actually performed, was at Proof's Ebony Showcase, and M was on the bill that night. You know what I'm saying? Like, so, it's very connected.
So were M and Dilla, did they ever have conversation? Like, do you know of a time when they ran into each other specifically?
Of course. Because Paul, M's manager, used to have a studio in Pontiac before, right? Before he became, you know, the guy we know now, right? So then this is pre-Paul going to college and everything. Wow. Like, Paul used to be a rapper.
Right.
His rap name was Paul Bunyan, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, Paul Big, right?
Huge.
Like, so, and so we, like, you know, he was around, and everybody in, you know, our little crew would go up to Pontiac and use the studio from time to time, and Paul was on the scene. And when he went to college, he said, you know what, I'm going to law school, and I'm going to come back and be everybody's lawyer, right? Mm-hmm. And it kind of, you know, so yes, there was, Paul and M used to go by Dilla's crib, like, early on, but this is early.
You get what I'm saying? Years ago.
Now, we all kind of mixed and mingled in one way or the other. Like, you know, Slum, again, D12, and actually D12 was a little later, but Slum and Proof and M, and like, they were kind of in one lane. And then all of the things that kind of came off of them from, like, Royce and us, we were all had deals at the same time. You get what I'm saying? So when we was doing the Frank and Dank album, we was going to Studio A in Detroit, and I swear to you, we would go during the week, and Frank and Dank and Dilla would do sessions from 9 to 5, and then Royce would come in and do sessions from 5 to whenever he left. You know what I'm saying? Like, so we've always kind of blended together and mixed and mingled, and different people on different tracks. We all, you know, got songs here and there. Like, so yeah, it was always a mixing and mingling. It wasn't always about work per se, but we were in the same, because again, hip hop wasn't what it is today.
Right.
So, yeah.
We had places that we went to and that we hung out, and yeah, you run into everybody.
I mean, it's crazy, because if people had, you know, when you're in a local scene and everyone's trying to do the same thing, you're not necessarily all trying to work together. You're just friendly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, if
with hindsight, you know, we could have had a friggin' Eminem JD album. If people were able to see, like, yo, you know, real, you know, is if we came together and did a joint. Like, history could be completely, completely different. As we know.
Yeah. Yeah.
When did JD go? Did he always go by Dilla also? Because
I was gonna ask that.
Well, because nope. I remember firmly as a fan, and now I feel like, Frank, I feel like one of the few at this point, you know, who was a true fan prior to his death. You know, because Dilla is one of those guys who was wildly appreciated while he was alive, but by a much smaller sphere.
Yeah, so I feel like he's one of those guys who were, he made an impact on his peers first and was heralded inside the industry, which means it allowed him to work and do the things he wanted to do that would later get to the people. But I think he was, and you know, as an artist, if I speak an artist first, I think that's what you want. You want your peers to say you're great. The people, that'll come. You know what I'm saying? So I think part of his success and part of his being able to be relevant was because his peers held him up. You know what I'm saying? Because
yes,
you know, people don't have a problem acknowledging his greatness as they see it. You get what I'm saying? So mm-hmm. I think that early on in the industry, there was a lot of that. There was a lot of, again, Frank was there for most of it. You get what I'm saying? So you got to understand, my view is Erykah Badu comes to Detroit to work on a record because Dilla don't want to leave Detroit. He want to work at home where it's comfortable. So Erykah Badu comes, and you know, it's Erykah Badu. You understand? Yeah. So she comes, yep. She got security and the baby and the nanny and all of that. And guess what? Frank is going to have to go pick her up because that was my position at the time as the right-hand man. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Frank, take the Rover, go pick up Erykah, bring her back to the studio so we can work. Okay, I'm going to go pick up Erykah. But understand, when I get to pick up Erykah, I expect it to be, you know, security, but no, Erykah told everybody they can't go. I'm going to the studio to work with Dilla. Security, stay home. Nanny, take care of the kid. Blah, blah, blah. So much so that the security had to pull me aside and give me the strong face and put his hand on my shoulder and say, take care of my girlfriend. Don't, you know, like he squeezed that shoulder real tight. Like, hey,
yeah.
Any problems, bro? I know who to look for type of thing. So, you know, so my view of it is his peers respected him and said, okay, we see what we see, so we're going to come to you. You don't want to come out here? Cool. So we had everybody in the crib.
That's big, man. That's
greats,
big.
Greats coming to the crib in his mama's basement. You understand? Working. And
was the basement nice?
No. It wasn't no done up. It was a daycare during the day, bro. We worked from 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. because the daycare ran from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m.
Wow.
You know,
even in the heyday when Erykah was coming and all that?
Yes. And, you know,
would he cover his equipment?
No, because mama would kill a kid if they went over there. No. But no. I mean, you know, they had it because it was upstairs in the house and then they had an area downstairs. But that area was lined with his record collection. And then he had a corner that used to be a bar area. And that's where everything sat. So the kids didn't go over there.
Is his stuff still in the basement or no?
No. That house, man, if I had the money, I would go cash that house out right now and make it a museum. No, his equipment is all over the place. Like, his brother got most of his major big stuff.
Illa J.
And that's in the D. And then, you know, obviously bits and pieces in the Smithsonian and different things like that. So, yeah.
Wow.
When did it change to Dilla? Let's get that part. Let's get that. Because he was JD. When we started, like, sweating this dude's music, he was definitely JD.
He was JD because he was John Doe before, right? That's, he started as John Doe. And then it moved to JD. And honestly, he was thinking about trying to figure out changing his name because of Jermaine Dupri. Because even though he's Jermaine Dupri, everybody called him JD. So JD, the first thought they had was Jermaine Dupri. Obviously, he had the biggest hits, and you know what I'm saying, at the time. So he was already thinking about trying to figure something else out. And it was Common who named him Dilla.
Mm.
It was Common who came up with the nickname Dilla. And it kind of stuck. And that's what he said, you know what?
Was it just a nickname?
It was just a nickname.
It was just something like, hey, what's up, Dilla? Like,
yep.
That's the thing about the hood. Yep. The hood is like your nickname gets a nickname.
Yeah, of course. No. He because you know they would shorten it up. Jay, they call him Jay or JD or just D. And one time, you know, Common with his slave, yo, Dilla, and it stuck. It's stuck. You know what I'm saying?
It's just so interesting because now that is how he's known. You know,
he's one of
the most iconic producers and sort of, you know, artists who we've lost that exists. You know, he's all the way up there, and the way he's known is as J Dilla. Mm-hmm. And I always just find it so interesting because you have the new cats who came along later who all refer to him as Dilla. And mm-hmm. I still think of Dilla as being the cool way of saying his name when he was still JD.
But that's what it was.
Right.
That's what it was. That's where it comes from.
Yeah, I remember people like, yo, you mess with Dilla. I'm like, you mean JD? Like, it's just so funny how history changes everything. Him and Tom, like, ended up becoming roommates and super duper close. So he just – was it just like a Midwest thing, the way y'all got along? Like, it seems like he just kind of fit in with your guys' energy.
Yeah, and Calm was different, man. Calm would come to Detroit and stay for, you know, a week, 2 weeks at a time and get him a hotel room and rent a car. And he would, you know, have his own kind of lane, but he would, you know, he driving a dealer career and pulling up. And, you know, like early on, he would come in, we'd pick him up and that. But after a little while, he kind of got his groove and he said, you know what? Nah, I want to keep it as comfortable for everybody. So Dill ain't got to come get me. I'll get a car and this, that, and the other. So Calm kind of came and entrenched himself in the D. And even that, man, like when they were recording like Water for Chocolate, like Calm would come to the D and record, like obviously him and Dilla be in the studio making beats, coming up with concepts, that type of thing. And then Calm would do like scratch vocals in Detroit. And then they would go take everything to New York and mix at Electric Lady in New York. So like Calm got so deep, like Dilla would go out there and like for Dilla's level of comfort and just to make sure he was straight, Calm would call me the next day, Frank, yo, just go to the airport, your ticket will be there, meet us in New York. I had a car bring you and you come hang out. Because he did that to make sure Dilla was comfortable, to make sure he could move around and be, you know, common sense, the celebrity rapper guy, and Dilla could still be working and doing his thing and be comfortable. We can be smoking and doing whatever the hell we gonna do. So, yeah, now Calm, you know, he extended himself and made it so that their relationship grew to that. You get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And then when they moved out here, you know, Dilla was battling his sickness and Frank and Dank was in Canada. You get what I'm saying? And we were back and forth, but we were really mostly there, you know, entrenched and recording, touring and doing all types of stuff there. And so
that's why all my Toronto friends love you.
Yeah, man. We,
like, all, like Cardinal's, like, one of my best friends.
Oh, dope, and, like, dope. He's not even my guy,
he's, man. Yeah, he's my brother. But, like, when I go to Toronto, they play a lot of your shit. Like, when we do, like, throwback parties and, like, just our own type of vibe, you know, I'm always, like, the New York guy. I'm always playing, like, New York album cuts and college radio joints. Yeah. And when Cardi gets on, he plays shit from you all the time.
He plays shit like this right here.
It's Frank Nitti in the place to be. With JD to the LIMLIB. So let me see you touch the sky. Let me see you wave your hands up high. Frank Dank Dilla chasing paper,
blazing up in his bitch. It's a crazy story to that song.
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah, we have a podcast where we love to tell crazy stories. So
I got so many that this is not going. We can do that podcast too. I got a ton of them. But anyway, this record, right? When Madlib sent beats, me, Dank, and Dilla was in the studio listening to beats, right? And it was like, I don't know, 50 or 60 joints, right? So we just listening, smoking, listening, and check. And like, you know, it's Madlib. So it's banger after banger after banger after banger. And throughout the session, we all like, you know, different joints. Woo, that's crazy. Or whatever the situation, our reactions, right? So later on, you know, a few months in, you know, now the joints, all the joints is good, but you got to be the one to put the hump on your back, right? Mm-hmm. Now, because we didn't smoke a bunch of blunts and your body didn't chill down. And so McNasty Filth came on and everybody was like, okay, word, right? But it wasn't like, woo, or jumping around or any of that. It was just like, yeah, that's dope. And like Dilla, like part of me and Dank called what we went through with Dilla and coming up, like trying to earn a spot to be able to be in the studio and one of the groups running amongst the crew, and that we call it boot camp, right? Because we had challenges and things we had to do as MCs to get better. And like, so that's how we operated with Dilla. That's how our music relationship was. Like, we never got to pick a beat from a CD or from one of his beat tapes. Everything he did for us, he made on the spot because he wanted it fresh and it had to be a challenge for us. It had to be something. We didn't know what it was. We had time to sit with it, make it work, right? So McNasty Filth was that, because we didn't go, woo, that's it, that's easy type thing. Because we were just like, yeah, that's dope, okay. He was like, no, that's it. That's the song right there. Y'all got to write to that. right? And and he taught me how to run the studio like way back in the day because he got tired of doing Frank and Dang vocals. So he said, Frank, you got to learn how to cut vocals, right? So he would make a beat and he would go upstairs and go do whatever, go to sleep, deal with his girl, whatever the situation he was going to do. And Frank would have to do the vocals so that the next morning he could mix them and we got a song to ride, right? So McNasty Phil, because we didn't give him the feeling that this would be an easy one, right? Or this is one that's just going to tell you what to say. You ain't got to think about what to say. This one is going to tell you what to do, right? Mm-hmm. He went upstairs. I don't think he thought we was going to come with anything before he woke up the next morning. We did all our vocals. We did everything. Everything that you hear from us, we did that night. All our vocals, pieces, right? And then he had to come and fill it in. He didn't know he was going to finish the song. So by the time he came down in the morning with the blunt, hey, man, what y'all got? Y'all got some? Press play on the machine. And it was like a whole song laid out, basically. And he was
just,
like,
just pockets for him to jump in.
Yeah, and actually, no, we had, because our sections was different. We had 8-bar sections, right? He chopped them again to 4 bars to put his sections in, right? But this is the funny part. When he heard our song, he was like, oh, y'all came up with this? Oh, man. All right, y'all niggas got to go. Get y'all ass out of here, man. I got to do all this writing because of y'all. Now I got to sit down and write this song. Studio session over. Y'all go to the hood. I'll get y'all later. because he didn't expect us to have a whole song ready.
Well, and I understand his logic, too, because when you hear that beat, if I was to hear just that instrumental, it doesn't come naturally what you do on that. Like, that's a weird... And it ended up working beautifully, but I get why he thought, like, all right, good luck messing around with this. Y'all will figure it out at some point.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think he thought we was going to get up in the morning, and then he'll come, and we'll all finish the song. But it was like all our parts was done. Everything you hear from Frank and Dank on that record was already done. Wow. We didn't have to add anything, the ad-libs, nothing. All that was done.
Yo, how underrated is Dilla as a rapper? Like, I mean, you know, he's to me, his pocket is so good. Like, it's not that he's the illest lyricist of all time, but he just knows how to rap. Like, he just
his rap was another instrument.
Yeah. Right? You got to understand that part. Like, you know, he didn't see rappers as rappers. He didn't hear words from rappers. He heard a tone and a sound.
Yeah, melodies and all that.
Yeah, yeah. And it's all about, like, the way he taught us was you don't fight the beat. You get what I'm saying? And a lot of rappers fight the beat.
Especially lyricists.
Lyricists be really boxing with the beat. They be either ahead of it or on top of it. You understand?
So, a lot of real lyricists sometimes they rhyme over whack beats because the beat's not fighting.
Yeah, they want to showcase their vocals. So, he taught us what you're saying is cool, but how you're saying it, where it fits within the melody of the song, where all these different, you got to flow within it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I mean, that's interesting. If you listen to Frank, like to a verse of mine, per usual, it's going in and out as far as flows. Like, I might be rapping in one cadence for 2 or 3 bars, 4 bars, and then switch the cadence because the beat kind of tells me the bass line switches up, like, because I'm trying to fit in as an instrument as opposed to just putting my vocals on top of whatever's here. You understand?
Wow.
So,
wow.
Like, with that said, he approached lyricism in that way. But Dilla was one of the illest lyricists. He don't get credit. And again, I'm speaking from an MC's point of view, and technical skill and pocket is very heavy with me. Like, it's not all about what you say, because what you can say could sound whack. You could say something really poignant that sounds whack over the beat.
You get what I'm saying? Yes, that's such a thing.
So yeah, so now it's for us, it's all about blend. So our music is that. It's very feeling oriented. Even if we're talking about strip clubs, and that it's all about the bounce. Like, the strip club, the Naked Girls was great, but the vibe created the bounce that he needed to make music. You know what I'm saying? There was a rhythm to this girl's ass shaking. It wasn't just, you know what I'm saying? It wasn't just a naked ass. There you go. And but that swing was where we was. You know what I'm saying? And a big old ass can't move fast like a little booty. It got a little sway, a little flop. It fit in the pocket. You feel what I'm saying? So that was part of a strip club, and him going to the strip club early on. Of course, it was about seeing strippers, and we was young guys. But we did it for years. It wasn't just a moment. That was a year. We almost bought a strip club. He almost bought our local strip club that we went to.
Yo, if you were to play, and like, there's a lot of other things I want to get to, but I realize we got to wrap in a few minutes. And guess what? We could do this again next year. So next year we can get into the specifics of Welcome to Detroit and Fantastic Volume 1 and 2. There's so many other places to go. But if you're talking to someone like Saif, who has an appreciation of Dilla, but doesn't have the deep connection to catalog, where do you go? Someone says, yo, Frank, we want you to play a set of Dilla. Where are few records that you go to?
You know what? Actually, it's a lot of remixes that I feel like he got a Janet Jackson remix and a brand new heavy remix.
I know
remix
that one. Yep, I know that one.
And it's a rare record where it's a couple of D'Angelo remixes on there and some Master A stuff. And I'm doing that to show the range of artists, you understand? And then obviously you got the Janet and brand new heavies, and these are, you know, noted name people with names and legacies, and it would show how he did them as well, you understand? And then, you know, he got classics, you know, with Erica and Common and The Roots and all these different people. But I think the remixes with outside artists, the stuff he did with Jamiroquai and I can't think of their name. It's it was a pop group.
I don't even think I know the UK. He did. I don't even think I know he did a Jamiroquai.
There's a Slum Village Jamiroquai remix. It's a joint. The name of the group is 9 Yards. It's an R&B group, a pop R&B group, kind of like some NSYNC-ish kind of thing, but a little more R&B from the UK. It's a remix. I mean, a song he did with them called Find a Way. You know, he's done so many things that was outside the, you know, outside the box as far as hip hop goes, that I don't think a lot of people kind of focus on that because you focus on the big ones. But you know, he got records with like a Asian kind of pop chick named Pole from way back in like 96, 97 type thing. You know what I'm saying? So I think the remixes and Rare Grooves is where I would go. You know what I'm saying?
Is this it?
Which one? Yeah. 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 Some of us remake it. Yeah. 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 I see people in the crab and blood, and I'm so rarely understood. Well, I don't know what they want from me. It's gonna take some time just to let them see. Day. And though it doesn't seem so, I've got to get this way. I'm going through a black. See, I would go.
That's that 90s, that's that late 90s Dilla sound right there.
Yeah. And then I think, you know, the average person who kind of just loves music or listens to music would hear Jamiroquai's vocals and it'd be familiar. And then I feel like, you know, it makes Dilla more familiar.
Saif, you know what the joint is you play? Here's the song I want you to play, Saif. If you're in a situation where you meet a chick with a big old butt who's just trying to fuck.
Okay.
And it's rare that there's rap that you can play for that situation.
I like what you're saying, though. Sex.
Break. Break. About to get nasty in this mouth. Come on, freak sack.
I had to do the ad-libs on this record.
You did the ad-libs?
He would make me do his ad-libs on a lot of things. This is me right here.
Yeah, I wanna f*** all night, let's do it.
I wanna f*** all night,
clean it up. I wanna crush all night right now.
I wanna crush all night.
I'm crushing. This is for my n***s and my nymphos. Non-stop banging like a Dilla instrumental. Yeah, turn it up in the whip, boy. Catch a glimpse of the fifth, turning up in the strip joints. Cause if you know what I know, my drink stay
high. He missing me in this rap, I think.
Yo, why did he clean that song up? It was always funny to me that he says fuck in the song, but he edits it, and then he said clean it up and changes it to crush. But the version on the Rough Draft record, it was edited. He had the little funky sound effects. Do you know why he did that?
Just being different. That he was like that. Like, we got records that there's no clean versions of. We have records that he didn't make an instrumental of it. Like, the only version that he put out or gave to us was the original with the vocals. Like, he was just like that, man. He was weird. He was a guy, like, he would have a 90-minute Maxwell tape, right? And if it ain't for nobody, it's for him, it'll be blank in the first 20 minutes and the last 20 minutes, and his beats would be in the middle of the tape because he didn't want people to be able to find him. It's like, you know what I'm saying? Like, so there's plenty of times I got tapes and I would put it on, you know, right at the beginning, push play and say, well, wait a minute, and go to the middle and find beats.
Wow.
Yo, well, listen, as we're recording this on Saturday, you have Dilla Fest tonight. What is tonight. That? What's included in that? What are you guys doing?
Oh, man, Dilla Fest Digital. It's like, It's part documentary, I think, like, and part music. But so we got a ton of interviews from the likes of Robert Glasper, Terrace Martin, T3, Guilty Simpson, Ant Fiddler, Afion Crockett. We got his mom, Illa J, J-Rock, Rich Medina, DJ Spinner, Pete Rock. It's just so many. We got so many interviews. And then we got a couple of live DJ sets from DJ Repmatic. DJ Spinner gave us a set. And just a lot of dope info about him and just like his impact on music from music guys. You get what I'm saying? Tune in on DillaFest.com at 6 p.m. West Coast time, 9 p.m. East Coast time. You know, it's about a two-hour little run. Again,
wow,
we got
a
whole bunch.
You
of,
don't.
Yeah.
You don't shout out the Detroit time. Wow. Wow, son.
It's the same thing.
You changed, Frank.
Hey,
you
listen,
changed,
man.
Frank.
Listen, man. We got to do East West Coast, man. We got a lot of people in foreign countries.
Detroit are used to figuring out what time that
means. Right.
So, Frank, thank you, man. Looking forward to checking that out tonight. Thank you for coming on. You really gave
man.
Like we haven't gotten before.
Oh, I appreciate y'all, man. Thank y'all for having me. It's early, but I'm about to smoke some more weed and enjoy my Saturday until it's Dilla Fest time. You know what it is.
Yeah, thank you. And I could hear we didn't even fucking scratch the surface of the stories you could tell, man.
Oh,
so
no,
we'd love to have you back, and thank you so much, man.
Oh, man, anytime, bro. I appreciate y'all. You know, I'm a big, long-time fan of both you brothers, so it's all good, man. Anytime y'all
from years ago.
Yeah.
You a fan from years ago.
Years ago, bro. Years ago.
Years ago.
So anytime y'all need a brother, man, holler at me. I'm here.
Oh, man. Thank you, Frank.
Thank you, bro.
All right, man. Y'all have a good one, man. Peace.
Yo, big shout-out to our guy, Frank Knitt. I like that guy.
That was amazing. And here's the thing about it. Not even a – I guarantee there's so much more shit we could learn.
No.
So much more.
So, Syph, I didn't even want to talk about, like, the end and about, like, the different albums, the different labels, the
Common
Village years.
Common told me he used to spend nights there, like, just working on shit. Like, he told me a whole bunch. Because the thing is, I did, I was at Dave Chappelle's house
in
Ohio for 4th of July. And they canceled the fireworks show in his town.
Oh,
so he paid for his own a half hour, 45 minute, whatever fireworks show, Questlove DJing, playing all unreleased Dilla shit. It was fucking a beautiful moment for America. It was a beautiful moment.
Yo, that's amazing. And his unreleased beats are, they're probably what you would like the most of his stuff.
Playing Questlove DJ and unreleased beats, Common and Erykah Badu telling Dilla stories. It was fucking awesome.
Well, hold on. Don't suck your own cock too much, okay? Because guess what? Let's keep it moving.
Mm-hmm.
We got Dead Prez.
What? Let's talk pun. It's a big day, ladies and gentlemen. One Ep is dead. And you know, it's weird because we've done a lot of podcasts about dead people, and I hate saying One Ep is dead on this day.
You have to like keep reminding people it's a De La Soul reference. It's not, we're not dead.
Yeah. But I've told you this before many times. You know, we've been doing this podcast since years ago.
Years ago.
And Dead Prez is one of my favorite groups. Maybe, I'm sorry, M1. M1 is here from Dead Prez.
What are you about to say?
I'm just saying Outkast, just literally like a little bit more. That's, you know what I mean?
All good.
Oh, you
all
can take
good.
That one.
I love Outkast.
If there was no Outkast, Dead Prez, favorite group.
Dope. I'll take that any day. Consolation prize, I'll take it.
Silver medal to Outkast? That's a good one.
Oh, shit.
What? Not good.
Can you guys hold on 1 second?
What happened? Oh, he's going to put on Dead Prez clothes.
Yes, stunt for him.
I never got these. I'm tight.
I'm sorry I don't have a Cypher Sounds jacket, T-shirt, hat, something. a Rosenberg wristband.
I'm sorry, I'm an idiot.
Oh, Cypher, you got your gear on now.
Oh.
Sorry.
There you go.
He came RBG now. Yes,
that's actually this is actually the first time I'm wearing this, and it's kind of like I didn't break it in yet. It's kind of like right out the package.
People don't know those can be. They don't give too much because it's heavy embroidery. It doesn't. You can't tell if you don't have it, but the thing is so embroidered the fuck up that you can't.
Give. You're right. There's no give on it.
Yeah. All day. Thank
this
you.
This is that the Dead Prez Supreme collabo.
Yeah.
And when I tell you. I saw this was coming out. You know, I bought every piece from this collection.
Wow. So if you bought every piece in the collection, how many pieces was that, M1?
Could have been 10, I think. There was like a bandana. There was
got the tag on it.
Boom.
Quilted jacket. I see. I can't wait to tell Wes. We did the pants and the top to go with that. There was
I didn't get the pants. I didn't get the pants. Yeah.
You're a sellout.
Okay, first of all, this is why I asked you to be here. You know, today, or not today, but we're doing this podcast in remembrance of a weird day in hip hop to us, which is the day Big Pun passed away is also the same day of Dilla's birthday.
Wow. So
just in a hip hop essence, two of the greatest ever, both have passed and moved on to the next realm, but that day being the same day is weird in hip hop. And the reason why I asked you to do this is because no one would ever even, when you talk about Big Pun, you want to talk to Fat Joe, you want to talk to Remy, you want to talk to Cuban, the Terror Squad. Yes, we've done all that already.
Right.
There's an interlude on Pun's album that is so left field.
I mean, Syph, when I tell you what the first time happening? I heard that, I was you're like, they're on the same label. Okay. I know they're both
label,
on the
okay.
But he's teaching him to sing. And it sounds like this authentic moment. Like you're right, Syph. It's completely baffling as a listener at the time.
And it's like he's like, I want to sing. And you're like, go ahead, sing. Like,
right.
Break down that whole moment to us, please. Because then I'm waiting for the beat and the song to the verses to
come. No, just wait.
It never comes.
No, just Rain and Thunder. And then the next song.
No Dead Prez feature. I'm waiting for the raps.
Right. Okay. So, boom. All right. First of all, I have to preempt what you're saying because wow on the moment of Pun's death and Dilla's birth. Wow.
Yeah.
The only thing I can make that's akin to that is December 4th, which is the day Fred Hampton Sr. was murdered, Judas and the Black Messiah. If anybody know about the movie, go see it. It's about that guy and the day Jay-Z was born.
Yeah.
So that's my only prior correlation to anything that amazing happening, lightning striking. And with that being said, brothers, I couldn't explain it to you either. Look, right. we both had come from the studio previously. Like, we both were working in
you and Stick or you
me,
and Puck?
No, me and Dad Prez, me and Stick, and then Pun.
Stick is here.
Okay, I saw that. Yeah, good. Yeah, let's bring him in.
Yeah, let's stick in. Wow, sorry to interrupt your story.
Wow, this is crazy. I'm excited about this.
We're gonna get to the story.
Okay. He's connecting to audio. Where is Stick, by the way? M1.
He'll tell you. Atlanta, I believe. I don't know. I don't want to assume anything, but he's my busy. Bro lives in Atlanta.
I know he's probably in the gym somewhere or somewhere in a mountaintop doing pull-ups.
1-2-1-2-1-2. What to do?
Yeah. People's Army.
All right. Oh, what up, MA? So much.
What's good, bro?
How you, man?
Hanging.
All right.
Thank you for being here. I'll tell you the whole thing in a minute, but really, we were talking about, you know, we're celebrating Big Pun and Dilla today.
Hmm.
And that the interlude on the Pun album is a phenomenal piece of work that we're trying to figure out how it even happened. Em is just about to tell a story. You jump in when you need to. Go ahead, Em.
All right, Em, set it off.
Oh, no. Okay, so Stick, they asked how it happened. And my first answer to that was, I don't know. So this is, we were coming from the studio previously. We had been working, meaning Dead Prez, on our album and the artist on Loud on their albums. We knew Pun was working as per Matt, Matt Scott.
I knew the story was them. I knew they'd have to have a part in it, but okay, keep going.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we just know that the artists that are akin to us on the label, they keep us abreast on what's happening. And it's healthy because we like loving to hear the new fly shit that's coming out of the label. And of course, the nervous center of Loud at that point is the label. They had a listening room. And everybody, a lot of people have heard about Loud Records listening room, where, you know, we smoked a lot and exchanged a lot of great ideas. Well, boom, long story short, here we go after a long night session. And we're in the listening room. And in comes Pun, and probably like everybody else, the whole Terror Squad. Pun got bangers. I don't even know. He got bangers. He sit down on the couch. He takes up half the couch. We sitting everywhere else, and he's playing bangers. And then he asks
off his
new shit. Or everything is the features. You know, we just playing. You know, anything. You know, and he's like, "Yo, what y'all got? You know, what y'all been working on?" And Stick, we always kept these cassettes, like, you know what I'm saying, from the previous days, and it was like this was like, you know, it was ADAT then, right?
Remember the little ADAT machine?
So anyway, long story short, we've just been working on it, and I don't know, because Stick is not the kind to share with a lot of people shit, and he produced this track, so he'll tell you about how it all happened and all that. But literally, we put the shit on, and when it came on, he immediately fell in love with it. He felt a mood. It's almost like this meditative mood came over him.
So has everyone else ever who's heard that?
That's a great point. Yes.
and then he I don't know. And even like to us, we were like, well, what do you want to do with the song? Because at that point, it was Stick singing a piece that he had on a natural loop, and it was like he wrote it was already written, you know, and he loved
technically you were playing your song. It was a Dead Prez song
it was
like, you know, in the creative, you know, like if you got some shit you working on in a workshop, that's not for the for the showcase. You know what I mean? It's like we just trying stuff out. And it was a few different songs on that ADAT, right? And me and Eminem, we used to be in that room, and that ADAT was playing when Pun came in. And it was just in the background type shit, right? And then if I remember, because that's a lot of blunts ago, right?
Of course,
blunts ago.
Yeah. but I think however it happened, like it just came on. And I jumped up to be like, yo, let me cut that shit off. I'm on there half singing. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want that shit to play. And then, Pum was like, nah, don't turn it off. And you know, like M said, he was feeling the vibe of it. And I was halfway embarrassed because, like I said, it was just a sketch.
And it's just an idea, yeah.
Which is, by the way, ironic. That you felt embarrassed because the whole skit is about Pun being embarrassed to sing on the song.
Right.
In fact,
I gave it. So right on the spot, Pun was like, I'll buy that from you right now, and pulled out money. Like he pulled out a knot of money. Right. And we made a verbal agreement right in that moment. And I'm going to tell you how raw it is, what you're getting, right? The shit was so such a just a scratch sketch that as it is with my vocals, unmixed, whatever, that's what we gave Pun. And he sung on top of it and had the engineers, you know, bring out the best of the sound. But it wasn't like we tracked it out or nothing like that. He just took it right off how it was. So
you're not gonna find a story of this. I don't even know what it's called. Interlude song, anywhere else.
But did you guys ad lib and make up the conversation on the song?
No, nothing. Pun did all of that. Like, you know what I mean? He bought it. We gave it to him as is, and I told him like I can't track it out. I don't even know if I know where the diss was or nothing. Right. You know what I mean? And he was like nah. And then when we heard it, or Scott or somebody played us like before it dropped. But then we had heard how he was hearing it, right? And you know, they, you know, go ahead and sing, man. Use your voice, you know, blah, all that. That was Pun. Like we didn't
have anything to do with that. So who's then talking in that part with them when he's going back and forth?
That's somebody from Terror Squad, I think.
What?
Yeah. Wow. Sife, you thought it was them, right?
Yeah, of course I thought it was you.
Because it says Future Dead Prez.
We on the beat and on the
singing
the,
and on the singing.
The singing.
And the vibe. Wow. It's a vibe. It's a vibe.
M is on there too. M is singing the lows.
it's a vibe. I'm gonna tell you something.
Wow.
That song to me represents, and I struggle to this day to understand like how what he was connecting with, but I do think like there's a vulnerability to Pun that a lot of people didn't know.
Right. Yeah.
And to me, he was giving that a glimpse of that.
Yes.
And like, I think for some reason it was important for him to show that. And it blew me away to even think that he wanted to show that. You know what I mean? So I love that guy, man.
Pun was a tough guy, man. But funny, like the thing I love about Pun the most, me, especially now that I'm a comedian, how funny he was. You know what I'm saying? Right. Like, He took care of a lot of people. He was giving, I mean, probably to a fault. I went to Pun's house once and there was like five cars and motorcycles all parked on the sidewalk, all had stacks of parking tickets. He didn't care. But there was a lot of sides of Pun you didn't know, because if you listen to the music, like you were either gonna get killed or he was going to run a train on your girl, which is both.
That's right.
Well, but to me, like, not to go too deep, but he's my favorite MC of all time. And to me, what I think is become cool about the Pun existence in hip hop is that he's one of the only greats where we are now honest about his shortcomings and complexities as a person. You know, his wife and son have spoken about his abuse also. And that they still love him, but they went through pain with him. Like, his picture is actually full and complete, that people are not one thing. People are very complex individuals. And obviously from the way Pun passed, we know he struggled with addiction. Like, this food thing was a real thing. These were all. So he's just he's just a complicated dude with a lot of pieces.
So glad you said that, though, man. It's so important to just see us in our whole self and acknowledge how we impact others positively and negatively. You know what I mean?
But that's the thing. That's the thing. I don't want to get into a whole thing about it, but that's the thing about like someone like Pun. Like, they say, you know, he was a little abusive to his children and maybe even his wife. But like, people think that if your dad hits you, you're just going to hate your dad for the rest of your life. You still love your dad.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? He got probably, everyone has problems. And you know, depending on the level of it and who you are, but like, people sometimes judge you for still loving your father because he was abusive when you were a kid. It's like, it's my father.
Right.
Right.
You know,
well, and Chris and Liza and their family, they still love Pun. But they also were brave in kind of telling the whole story, because when you idolize, I mean, listen, to me, he's the greatest. When he's going, there's no one better who's ever done it. And you don't have to wipe away someone's story or only focus on the bad part of the story. Like, you can take the whole thing and say, flawed human being, amazing man altogether. It can all, you know, be there. Did you guys have did the relationship go beyond that day? Like, were y'all on showcases together? Did you see each other at Loud? Where was the relationship?
Yeah. Yo, we had so many great moments. You know, I'm tell you something. Well, there was a tour that we went on early. I remember all of Terror Squad and Eminem was on early. I want to say it's the Lyricist Lounge tour. And man, like, state by state, I remember Ohio the most. As much respect and soldier salutism as they had inner Terror Squad, and you know, they would let loose just as hard, you know, literally tear rock and roll style a whole a hotel room apart, you know what I'm saying? but you know, I also just remember you know, I remember the Bronx Pun. But even still, the part that sticks with me the most is having a relationship with him, coping with his addiction. He went to programs, and some of those programs he went to was in my hometown, Raleigh, North Carolina.
Yeah, he went down to Duke, right?
Yeah, exactly. You know, and it was crazy,
really,
because I was able to see him there too.
Oh, and you visited him there?
Yeah. You know, it's my hometown. So so when I went there, I was able to make connection. But to see him go in the studios there and what he was, you know, it was a real moment. I saw the whole Pun.
This is food addiction.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And he went to a facility to help him with that.
Remember when he says, I lost 100 pounds, I'm trying to live. He had just lost 100 pounds.
Right.
Just like that. And he was gone that quick, like right after that.
That's the craziest shit about that verse, that he died right. I mean, he might have recorded it once before, but us hearing it and then he passed. I struggle with food addiction myself. Stick, I want to have a conversation with you offline. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? I got my workout on.
Uh-oh. Nah, son, we need it right now. I need it in public.
Uh-oh. But yeah, so and obviously he was a fan of yours. Label mates, you know, create a cool camaraderie, but it's more about, with Pun, I'm sure it's more about the music and stuff.
Yo, you know, the thing you guys were saying about Pun's, let's say, you know, the balances, the different sides, right? I think that's what he felt in that song, you know, because the song was like, you know, even though the rain keep coming down, right? I know the sun ain't gonna wash away, you know. I think that's what we had in common the most. That all sides of us, we gonna give it to you raw. You know?
I'm joking. We joke around a lot on here, obviously, but yo, the Pun album is so classic. But then the Pack and the Mac in the back of the act is one of the funniest interludes in hip hop ever. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then the shit you have is like, every time I listen to it before we recorded this, just so I could have it fresh in my mind. I still thought that was you talking on that. That shit, every time I hear it, I get chills. Like, wow. That shit is from what, 98?
Eight? Yeah, exactly.
It's 2021 and I still get the same chills. Mm. It's a fucking beautiful piece of art, man. And I just thank y'all for just
fucking. We need to revamp that, man. MA, yeah. Like, I would, bring that song to.
That would be tight.
Before you came on, I said, I always wished the beat would drop and y'all did a song to it, and it never happened.
See?
Yo, Stick got a version. I remember rocking to the studio out with it. He had drums to that shit. He just
don't do that.
Had made so many iterations of it. The what we was listening to didn't. But I know he, with that producer right there, he had some amazing vibes to that.
Don't do this, because now my life mission is to find those versions. So
what, like, talk to him.
Like, now we have to. Where's the tape?
Him would have it. Trust me. He would have it.
Where are you at, Stick?
I'm in the A.
Okay, you in Atlanta, you in Miami.
Yeah.
I'll be joining both of y'all soon to dig through old DAT tapes.
Yo, okay, so hold on. M1 and Stickman, hang tight for one sec. We're going to wrap this episode. Saif, here's what I think we do. I think we wrap this Pundilla Spectacular.
Thank you.
And then we come back with a full Dead Prez episode about their career. How about that?
I love that. And I didn't get to tell my story of how Pun tried to pull me into a Triznane once, but we'll do that another time.
Well, and didn't he also pull a gun on you once?
He did.
Okay. So we'll save that for another day. We love and appreciate you guys. Please go rate, comment, subscribe, do all those things you can. If you could Patreon, amazing.
Yeah.
If all you can do is rate, comment, spread the word, that's amazing too. I'm
loving all the fan artwork. The Juan Epp clothing for the culture is coming soon. And please, no disrespect to you guys listening, watching, whatever. I don't feel there's enough disrespect towards Billy June. Let's get that ramped up.
You know what?
Let's ramp that up.
It's a great point. Whether he got a haircut or not, he deserves all the disrespect.
Let's ramp the hate towards Billy June up. Like, what are we doing?
Wait, Saif, you know what, though? There's only one way to end this episode. And I know what it is. Yes, I'm so smart.
You're a smart guy.
This is the only way that we could end it. Catch you guys next time. RIP Pun and Dilla. Apparently that's not Dead Prez.
No, now that I'm hearing it.
You realize it's not them.
It's like music to me. It's magic. It's got to be Tony. It's got to be Tony.
You think it's Tony? Understand? Come on, Pun. Just try one time. And they all know. You understand? And they all know. But you're the one. Head over the rain.
Tony. No, I got you. Right there. Right there. I needed the verse. Right there.
Wait, but you know what he says there? Good looking props. Is it prospect?
Oh, is it prospect?
He says good looking props.
I thought it was listen. Tony.
Oh, no. Listen. We'll get the answer for you guys by next week. Just to be clear here, okay?
Okay.
Hey, go fuck yourself.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Hey, I'm Guy Raz, and on my show, Wisdom from the Top, I talk with CEOs and business leaders about the toughest challenges of their careers.
There's lots of ways to measure success.
Sometimes a company has to bet against itself.
We wanted to set ourselves apart by having a point of view.
Businesses really impact people's lives in pretty fundamental ways.
On Wisdom from the Top, some of the greatest business leaders of our time share their intimate stories of leadership, innovation, and transformation. Stories you won't hear anywhere else. Check out Wisdom from the Top only on Luminary. Now, back to your show.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.